So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to Trending. It is great to be with you. It is Friday after a long week with everything from the Supreme Court case addressing the future of abortion in this nation with the law coming out of Mississippi that banned abortion starting at 15 weeks. The case has gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. If you've missed my analysis on the oral arguments held before the Supreme Court as we wait over the next 6 months, which is normal for the court to deliver its decisions in June, you can at least get the update in terms of what we can do now and what happened this week. Hope. A lot of hope there, but also a lot to do with the current arguments on the ground, both politically, culturally, you name it. We are discussing it on Trending all this week. So catch the podcast, relevantradio.com/trending. Now, with all of this in mind, one of the most common things that you'll hear having to do with abortion is, well, you know, all we really need is more access to contraception. If we had more access to contraception, if it was more affordable, accessible, well, then we would see abortion numbers drop. So we're going to talk about contraception today from the perspective of its impact on women, health, the culture of contraception that we've been living in for the last really 60 years now. And what that idea is the reliance argument. In fact, before the Supreme Court of the United States, one key thing we saw happen over and over again in the pro-abortion attorneys' arguments before the court was that women are reliant, that abortion is necessary for them to live, necessary for them to be free, to have a family, to have a career and education. So we're going to address all of that today on Trending. In a sense, barely scratching the surface. Joining me in just a little bit will be Dr. Susan Caldwell, who's a medical doctor practicing Napro technology, and she works with women struggling with fertility issues, including infertility and other women's health concerns. She herself has an incredible story, one which includes years of contraceptive use and struggling with infertility. So we're going to listen to her personal testimony as well as her medical expertise when it comes to the contraceptive culture we're currently living in. Now, if you don't know this, studies have shown that as of the last couple of years, roughly 82% of women take some form of artificial birth control in the ages of between 15 and 45. What's happened is we've now seen four generations, the boomers, Gen X, my generation, the millennials, as well as Gen Z now, who have been fed and, might I argue, brainwashed with regard to contraception dependence. You see, these four generations have become completely reliant on two things, contraception and abortion as the fail-safe. So just ponder this for a moment. And I was reminded of this very much so by the oral arguments this week. And I also did an interview on Morning Air talking about the impact of contraception. And one woman wrote me commenting, Kathy from Milwaukee, listening on 1640 AM, about how it's been generations of young people in the school systems, watching TV sitcoms, any form of media, who have learned and been fed the idea that a baby basically ruins your life, takes the fun out of life. But think about it. There has been serious brainwashing on contraceptive dependence within schools, education system. I remember just a couple years ago, my sister was in high school, and she had religion teachers, high school teachers, history teachers, you name it, bringing contraception into their classrooms to talk about how young women need it in order to be free, in order to live, in order to be a participating member of society. You see, we see this in everything from even so-called clean TV shows and movies. We see it in the workplace culture that's been created. We see it even within the medical professionals who even turn to 13-year-olds and let them know that they can ask for their parents to leave the medical room so that they can talk about reproductive options. It's all over social media. It's pushed by our influencers. And it's being written as a part of American history. This is what makes women free. It's led ultimately, though, when we really think about it, I've seen this with my family, with friends, an anti-baby, anti-marriage, delay baby, delay marriage attitude. You seek the perfect timing until you have children. You have this anti-feminine attitude that's been created. This attitude that people say, oh no, you as a woman are not meant to nurture. And no, you as a man are not meant to provide or protect. Well, what this attitude has created has truly become harsh career women and predator men. And this is not a part of our nature. You know, the more I think about it, we've nurtured and outright brainwashed the idea that men are meant to be predators and women are meant to be harsh, cold, and loving, brought down by children or anything that could have to do with sacrificial love. You see, at a certain point, I think that we've even seen people of good faith, people of good upbringings, who over and over again, they've been told this so many times and they've seen it in their peer influence on social media, by influencers on social media and movies in the education system. Even if they had a fighting chance, grew up in a context where people didn't necessarily promote this idea. The fact that they were surrounded by it with their peers and education systems for so long, it's changed many people's minds. So I'd love to hear from you. You can join me live by commenting live on my Instagram at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I'd love to share your comments live. Or give me a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Have you had an experience that you'd like to share where contraception was pushed in an odd economics class or pushed in a history class having nothing to do with what you were learning, but pushing for some reason contraception into the conversation? I'd like to hear from you. Again, you can comment live now on Instagram or give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. I want to debunk a few of the common arguments that you'll hear for the principles of the contraceptive culture that we live in today. And these are just scratching the surface. The first one I want to touch on is the idea that contraception reduces abortion. You will hear a lot of this surrounding the Supreme Court, oral arguments on the abortion case. The reality is that abortion follows contraception. You can look at this legally in our country, where it began with, we saw a decriminalization of hormonal contraception in this nation. Well, what followed not long after? Abortion. It's the fail-safe of contraception. When contraception fails, abortion is used, because we've created a whole generation of children who were believed to be unwanted. There's a difference between a surprise and intentionally not wanting a human being. It used to be clear that you engage in intimacy, the potential is a child could result. I've seen this for years in front of the abortion clinics and working in the crisis pregnancy centers. And when I was working in the crisis pregnancy centers and in front of the abortion clinic, I would see time and time again that every single woman who I encountered was on some form of hormonal contraception when she found out she was pregnant. You see, contraception creates an anti-life, anti-baby culture, and that increases abortion numbers because contraception isn't always effective. Don't forget the fact that you're also asking, especially teenagers, when it comes to birth control, to take the pill at the correct time of day, to use it correctly, and therefore to make sure that they're totally quote-unquote safe from having a child. Kids don't even make their beds, don't even turn in their homework. I mean, there's so many things we could talk about, yet for some reason, people think contraception reduces the abortion numbers, but that's just not the case. It fuels abortion. It causes a need for abortion. This second thing that I want to touch on here is people will say contraception is necessary for sexual freedom. You see, that all determines, really is dependent upon what we think sexual freedom is. If you believe that sexual freedom includes multiple sexual partners, one night stands, and even risking your health and risking yourself to be exposed to sexually transmitted diseases, not getting married, or marrying multiple times different people, if you believe in open relationships, well, then sure, if that's your definition of sexual freedom, yeah, contraception would be necessary for that. But I don't think anyone would actually tell me that they want to live their whole life having one-night stands, being at risk for STDs, having multiple sexual partners, multiple marriages, never getting married. I don't think those are the dreams people have for the end game of sexual freedom. You see, in response to this idea that contraception is necessary for sexual freedom, we have to acknowledge that real sexual freedom addresses the idea that intimacy is meant to be with one person exclusively. That you don't need physical barriers or even chemical barriers to prevent what's supposed to take place fully in intimacy. There's, in other words, not a need for altered attachments with pheromones. You see, when you're on hormonal contraception, it changes the pheromonal makeup of you, that is women, when they're ovulating, not ovulating during their monthly cycle. What happens is that leads to a different type of mate that a woman looks for and a different type of mate that a man looks for. And so people are getting together who otherwise wouldn't normally get together because of the genetic complement is different when you're on contraception that you're attracted to versus when you're not. I've actually talked about this on an episode of Trending. We'll actually post that. Lucas will post that on my social media now for me, where we talk about pheromones and contraception, actually take a really deep dive into the topic of contraception, sharing a lot of things and studies and research you've probably never heard of. We'll include it in the show notes for the podcast for today. You can find it at relevantradio.com/trending, as well as post on social media in a couple minutes here. Follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You see, we have to understand when we're talking about real sexual freedom, it understands that complete, correct intimacy achieves its full union of persons for the good of the spouses and is open to that potency of procreation. You see, real unions require long-term committed relationships. And it's so important that we see this. Now, we'll touch more on another one of those arguments that's commonly made that upholds a contraceptive culture that we've been talking about. But to talk a little bit about this contraceptive culture that we live in today, I'm going to be joined now by Dr. Susan Caldwell. Now, Dr. Susan Caldwell is a NAPRO doctor. If you know nothing about NAPRO technology, you need to know, and you need to know for the women in your life. NAPRO addresses underlying medical issues that women have surrounding their cycles, fertility, infertility, and cuts to the heart of what's actually going on rather than putting a band-aid over symptoms that we so commonly see in our culture. I know I've had doctors recommend hormonal contraception to me for some of my health issues. I didn't need contraception. I had polycystic ovarian syndrome and Hashimoto's, a thyroid disease. That's not what I needed. And in fact, if I took it, it would have made my health a heck of a lot worse. And so it's important that we talk about that because we're going to discuss with medical doctor, Dr. Susan Caldwell, the impact of birth control that it had on her body and her life. And we're also going to discuss the medical impact of contraception. Dr. Caldwell, welcome back to Trending.
Hi, Timmerie. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about your own story. You have kind of this long journey where you eventually came to working with NAPRO technology from your own testimony that you shared before here on Trending, how you have children via in vitro fertilization, but wouldn't recommend it for anyone. We'll post a link to that in the show notes for the podcast as well as on social media now. But I want to talk a little bit about your story that we've not unpacked so much before, and that is your experience with contraception. When were you first prescribed it, and what were the initial intentions? What was its impact for you?
I remember going to the doctor when I was about 16, maybe a little bit before, and complaining that I had really painful periods. Now, my mom also had painful periods and ended up finding out when she was in her early 40s that she had severe endometriosis. So, you know, I was already, you know, kind of maybe the doctor was thinking, oh, wow, she might have, because endometriosis too, because it is, you know, usually inherited, often inherited. And so, of course, I didn't know that at the time. I just had really bad periods and I had acne. So birth control just seemed to be the easy, quick fix for those things. And to be honest, my periods got better and my acne got better. And at the same time, I was sexually active in high school. So it was also kind of a permission slip, if you will, to, you know, continue in this lifestyle. And my mom really didn't, you know, at the time, talk to me about it. So everybody else that I knew was on birth control and kind of having sex. So I thought, wow, this is a great win-win for me, right?
Right. You got on it for a medical reason, didn't have to talk about it, supported a lifestyle that was already being lived. And it was normal when you were engaging with other people. And that's the other thing, Dr. Caldwell. There are benefits to being on the pill that especially a teenager or a college student would love. From, you know, everything from lighter to no periods to helping with acne, giving you bigger boobs. I mean, all of this are things I think a lot of girls think this is great.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. You know, I met with a girl this week who came in. Her mom was just an awesome mom, and she was having some minor irregularities with her period. And, you know, it was easy. Like, we put her on some, you know, progesterone. It was just a common, easy little thing, just a bump in the road, really, for her. And at the end of, you know, we were nearing the end of the visit, and mom just needed me to share with this young lady why she was not being put on birth control like all of her friends were. She wanted birth control.
Wow.
So she felt like a, you know, kind of an outcast in her friend group, because here she was getting this, you know, I think beautiful alternative, you know, really health protecting form of treatment. So I had to basically go into this whole, you know, litany of apologetics around birth control about how, you know, this is going to, you know, help her, you know, avoid breast cancer. Anyway, I went through all of it, but I felt like, man, I was really having to defend the goodness of this option, because like you say, birth control is really the go-to, and all the girls, it's just the cool thing to do, I guess. Yeah.
And there's such easy access to it. You can get it without your parents knowing. Doctors can even ask parents to leave the room if the teenager is interested, as young as 13 years old, at least in the state of California. And it's unbelievable. And, you know, there's so many programs now, especially with the funding of hormonal contraception through the government, from what we've seen. And they'll send it to you for free. You have groups such as the Pill Club and Planned Parenthood. Who are mailing it in the mail in discreet packaging. No one knows what it is. And a lot of parents have no idea. I mean, parents, you've been there. I know, you know, remember some of my friends used to have P.O. boxes that they signed up for to send their report card to. Well, your teenager can do the same thing with birth control. You know, that's how easy it is. Let's talk a little bit more. You initially got onto the pill for health reasons, to help with, you know, what was going on with your health. It was given to you really as a band-aid for what was going on. What was the impact for you interpersonally as well as health?
Well, you know, it's never good for teenagers to have sex, right? So the fact that, you know, I was having, you know, superficial relationships in high school and really totally misunderstanding the meaning of my body, the meaning of the sexual act, so confusing. So it ended up causing a lot of kind of trauma, you know, when girls are having sex in high school and these boys, like you said, in the, you know, before I hopped on, you know, I have boys that are now 21, but I've seen them grow up in high school and they weren't even brushing their teeth every day. I mean, these people should not be having sex, right? I mean, they really shouldn't. So anyway, so these are not capable of loving, meaningful relationships at this age. So I was being hurt by these relationships. So it was, it was terrible. And in the meantime, you know, I was being set up for a number of conditions that, you know, birth control can lead to, in my case, infertility was the main one. So it was just bad from the get-go. But unfortunately, you know, we're in the world I was living in my family and my community, you know, no one really could speak up for the truth in my surrounding. So it's so important, Timory, that you are doing this and you are a voice to for these mothers to hear. To hear that they, you know, they can do this. They can step up and they can learn and they can really impact the rest of their daughter's lives by implementing this truth.
Now, I want to come back real quick before I forget, because I want to dive down the infertility conversation a little bit more. But you mentioned a little bit ago a story where you had to explain to the teenager before you, the mom asked you to, why she wasn't going on birth control, but instead was getting a solution. After all of the reasons you gave her about why this was healthier and better and the side effects for contraception, was she convinced? You know, did she understand where you were coming from?
You know, it's hard to tell. A teenage girl, you know, you could tell she was probably a little defensive, you know, because, you know, at that age, the most important relationships seem to be her friends. I mean, I know that really, hopefully it's the parental relationship, that attachment there that's very strong from a young age. But, you know,
she thinks it's her friends.
Right. She thinks it's her friends. And so I could tell she was really, you know, struggling inside to believe me. You know, here, this doctor she's never met before. I didn't have any relationship with her. So, you know, she didn't really speak a lot with me, but I'm so glad mom was there to hear it all, because it, you know, I think I was able to maybe give some language for mom to use, and just help her daughter to know that, hey, I know it seems like I'm not really caring for you right now, because it's, you know, this is kind of maybe a tougher road to go down, where you're going to have to, you know, take progesterone on certain days, and, you know, you're going to have to deal with a little, you know, your periods are going to be a little bumpier than your friends. So I'm hoping that later that conversation was able to continue at home, and that will continue just under the surface, just in her own mind and heart, that she really felt like, hopefully, that we were caring for her in that moment and it was the right thing.
And so many women do see and understand this, if not then, but years later, the good of not being on contraception or the negative impact of having been on it. We're going to come back talking more about how contraception use and infertility are connected, and we'll break through more of the medical impact of contraception with medical doctor, Dr. Susan Caldwell, also Napper Doctor. Follow me now on Twitter to get connected. Today, we'd like to thank John, who's listening in Illinois, for donating his Pontiac. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
If you're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio, if you have a question about birth control, we will take it now. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Or you can head over to my Instagram story now and ask. Many people talk about how birth control is the solution for reducing abortion numbers, etc. We've been talking about this all of today, especially in face of the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Supreme Court abortion case. Oral arguments began a couple days ago. If you didn't catch the analysis, subscribe to my podcast at relevantradio.com/trending, wherever you like to listen to your podcasts, and share that episode with others. Joining me now as we talk about the medical impact of contraception is medical doctor, Dr. Susan Caldwell. Now, Dr. Caldwell, we have had some questions come in, a lot of them having to do with the impact of the future after birth control use or long-term mm-hmm. use of birth control. Many people mm-hmm. are asking on social media, particularly Instagram, about fertility after the fact. Can you go further into mm-hmm. the connection between infertility, a crisis that is growing in our culture today, mm-hmm. and we are even seeing data showing that by the time of we hit 2050, the vast majority on the male and female side will actually need intervention in order to be able to conceive yeah. children. And so this is why this is important, so important now. Can you explain the connection yeah. with infertility?
Yes. I think a lot of people get on birth control and don't know how it works and what the long-term implications might be for their fertility, because they're really thinking about the present moment when they want contraception. They're not really thinking about the long-term effects. So really the biggest problem with contraception is the way that it disconnects and disrupts our brain ovary synchrony. So it's very important. So our brain and ovaries are constantly talking to each other to regulate all of the hormones every single day of the cycle. This is a day-by-day communication process that's happening between the brain and the ovaries between the woman's first period and her last period. And it's a delicate type of communication. So what you do when you start taking birth control is you just shut down the ovaries completely, and they no longer listen to the communication, to the hormones that are made from the brain that tell the ovaries what to do. So when you put the ovaries, you know, kind of on hold during that time, there's a disruption. So in other words, the communication that's constantly going on, when the communication is good, it begets good communication, right? But when the communication is bad, even when there's a disruption like stress or even a pregnancy, you know, a miscarriage, those are all major disruptions in that communication. But the body is very resilient, which is amazing in those cases, you know, stress, miscarriage, pregnancy, the body knows how to kind of get back online there, and all the communication can start working again. But when you're on the pill, this is a foreign substance that is an endocrine disruptor. You know, when they're studying chemicals that mess up ovulation, they use the birth control pill as a known, when they're, you know, because they know how bad the birth control disrupts ovulation. So when they compare that to other chemicals and medications, you know, the standard, like, oh, we know, you know, they know what the birth control does. So it really does take the ovaries offline, takes the brain offline. And every single woman is different in terms of how she recovers from that. So when I was learning the Creighton model fertility care system and the NAPRA technology as the medical arm of that, how to treat patients using the Creighton model, which is a charting method. So when I was learning all of that, the research that Dr. Hilgers did, they use a year as the amount of time that we give a woman to kind of recover from the effects of the birth control pill. But a lot of women don't like the idea of waiting a year, right? Mm-hmm. So when I got off the pill, I was not ovulating. Using, you know, a fertility awareness method, I was clearly not ovulating, and I got into a real panic, because what a lot of women want to do is they want to get off the pill and they want to be pregnant the next month, right? They're in a hurry, and like I was. And so we need to take time for a lot of reasons.
Interesting. So to recover. I think a big takeaway there is understanding the shutdown between the brain and the ovary connection that hormonal contraception creates, and then the necessity of it really a year to detox from hormonal contraception use. And it's so hard in the culture we live in where it says you have kids on your term. So it assumes I can be on birth control as long as I want, and then I pop off and okay, let's make this happen. You think it's going to happen overnight. And I've even known women who haven't been on birth control for years. They get married, they're like, okay, it's been 3 weeks, I'm not pregnant yet. Okay, it's been a month, it's been 6 months, I'm not pregnant yet. And, you know, it's the problem of the immediacy of our culture. And I think that points the necessity to understand that the solution does take some time. I know one of the questions we received on Instagram as well for you is whether you can talk about how long it takes on average to heal from hormonal imbalances that were prolonged by prolonged birth control use, especially let's say after having been on it for years and then stopping in your mid-20s.
Yes, that's such a good question, because there's a big difference between someone starting birth control in their, you know, in college, in high school, or in other words, before their first child. If someone starts birth control, you know, in their early 20s or teens, that is a much more worrisome condition than someone who takes birth control in between children. So, because the problem is when you're taking birth control that young, like when I did, you were literally messing with the development of a whole system of the body. Imagine if we took a child who was struggling to, you know, to walk very well when they were, you know, in their toddler years, and we put them in a wheelchair, and we didn't put them in physical therapy. We just put them in a wheelchair and we let people just roll them around all day long. That child is going to really have a hard time ever walking and running, because muscles are becoming atrophied. The tendons and the ligaments aren't really working as well as they should in helping all that whole system. The muscular system is not being activated. It's just dormant. So if that happens in the tender development years, then we have much hard, we have much more work ahead of us than if it's a mom who just takes the pill in between her kids. That is much easier to recover from because the system has already got kind of developed in the past, and now it's just kind of taken offline in after it's already matured and developed. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, it makes me think of my own story with, I didn't know for years, even until after we got married, that I had polycystic ovarian syndrome and Hashimoto's, both of which have to do with hormones and being able to have children. I remember for years, you know, I struggled with everything from acne to extremely painful periods and cramps. And you know, I remember times, you know, even throughout college where people kind of be like, well, you know, you could just, you know, we can prescribe you the pill as a solution. I'm like, nope, nope, don't even want to talk about it. They're like, well, it's here. Nope, I'm good. You know, that's not a solution for me. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And so because I would turn it down, I didn't get any more information medically, like for those issues. It wasn't until I really started to dig in different directions and turn to natural technology eventually that I knew. And you know what's funny is I always joke, I grew up around natural technology with resources being there. I never thought it would be me. And I think that that's what's so shocking sometimes. Even people who have never been on hormonal contraception, there are so many endocrine disruptors, as you've been mentioning, hormonal contraception is. But so is the dairy with all the hormones in dairy that this is part of the reason why there's this huge infertility crisis, even for women who have not been on the pill.
Yes. Yes, I totally agree.
Let's talk a little bit about how breast cancer is linked to low progesterone and how very commonly hormonal contraception is given, which also increases the issue of progesterone imbalance and is a group 1 carcinogen.
Yes, my goodness. So the breasts are so important. We've talked before about when a young woman, before her breasts are developed, so that our breasts become truly mature and developed in our first pregnancy. So anybody who's given birth control before their first full-term pregnancy, it acts as much more of a carcinogen than if it were given at any other time. So that's huge right there. But many women who have infertility and who have PMS and just a lot of symptoms that otherwise would be covered up with birth control, they have low progesterone levels in the luteal phase. And it has been shown that in research that low progesterone, chronic ongoing low progesterone puts women at risk of developing breast cancer later. So, I mean, you take someone who, you know, who not only, you know, has low progesterone and then you put them on birth control, which causes low progesterone because there's no progesterone in birth control, right? So the breasts don't get the benefit of the progesterone, which is an extremely important hormone for our breasts to be healthy and to resist cancer. So it's just a double whammy to the breasts, birth control. Yeah.
And there's so much more that we could say to unpack some of the scientific understanding of the not just the abortion breast cancer link, but as we're talking about contraception, the contraception breast cancer link, that people just like to shut their ears to, say, oh, that's just pro-lifers saying stuff like that. It's not. The medical science is clear, and it's at the level of the United Nations. It's in countless medical journals, yet people want to just say that people who are pro-marriage and pro-life are going to say these things. So it's important that we're sharing this information. Can you touch on the trend that we're seeing in our culture surrounding miscarriage as well? We've talked before about how natural technology can help to save a baby before miscarriage occurs, even identifying the potential for a possible miscarriage. But can you talk about this in relation to the link to hormonal contraception?
Yes. So another way the birth control pill works at the level of the uterus. So we talked about the brain and the ovary and the communication, but a very important way it works is the uterine lining. The uterine lining every month kind of practices in a healthy woman who's naturally cycling. It kind of practices growing and shedding and growing and shedding to prepare for a healthy pregnancy. And part of the growth process and the maturation process each month involves high doses of progesterone that our body makes that prepare that lining to receive and sustain the embryo and the growth of the embryo. So when you know, we have low progesterone. So by, as I said before, the birth control pill is by nature, what it does is causes low progesterone. So the effect on the lining is the lining is stagnant. It is complete. It doesn't grow. It grows only a tiny, tiny bit, but that lining does not mature. It doesn't practice, if you will, you know, to become healthy enough to receive an embryo. So, you know, the analogy I like to use is down here in Louisiana, we are well acquainted with farming and sugarcane, and the farmers go to great lengths to prepare the soil for healthy crops, you know, and they don't overuse the soil, you know, they don't use the same spot over and over again. They might let it go fallow. And I mean, there's all this science about how to, you know, help the soil to be as healthy as possible, but it's really the same analogy. You know, if you just went out and in any old dirt, you know, that was made of a lot of clay and you tried to grow crop, it wouldn't grow. It would not grow well. So we do need to attend to the foundation, which in this case is the uterine lining, and progesterone is just a key piece of that. So when someone is, you know, in decades of, you know, their lining, you know, like I see women all the time who get off the pill and they have trouble getting pregnant and they're not having, let's say they're not having periods. They're just, you know, getting nothing when they're trying to chart other than dry cycles. You know, I really caution them when they do start to see mucus and they do start to return to cycles. I tell them they really need to avoid pregnancy until their chart shows that they have healthy, you know, healthy everything. You know, we do an ultrasound, we look at the lining, because you really just, you know, it's bad to have a miscarriage, you know, and you can tell on the chart. I tell, you know, see it. And I tell people, no, wait, we need to get healthy. And so it's so nice to have that tool, you know, between the labs and the chart to help guide a woman and avoid a miscarriage.
This is the incredible power of NAPRO technology in the face of so many of the struggles today, from infertility, miscarriage, even seeing ahead of time signs of breast cancer in a woman's fertility charting. I mean, it's phenomenal what you can see coming ahead by just looking at a woman's fertility and understanding that her fertility is actually a sign of overall health. And this is what our NAPRO doctors are doing, helping to treat years of hormonal birth control to infertility, you name it. We're going to post links on social media so that you can find a NAPRO doctor near you. There are even many NAPRO doctors who now practice telemedicine, which I believe you do as well, Dr. Caldwell. Is that correct?
I do, but my license is for Louisiana. So currently, I can only treat people on telehealth who live in Louisiana.
So there are many resources, though, that can be looked at. Again, we'll post links on social media in the podcast notes for today's show. As you see, NAPRO technology is a solution in the face of the culture we're facing. I have one more question I want to get through. I know we have a lot more coming in on social media, but there's been this trend of an increase in hysterectomies. Does this have anything to do with birth control use?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So really, we have to just, you know, kind of pause and look at the reality of what women's health is right now. There's a lot of dead-end solutions being offered to women, to be honest. The dead-end solution of contraception, the one that's one size fits all, everybody gets the same thing. We're not interested in restoring your health. We're just kind of, you know, shutting things down so we don't have to look at it. Then you've got the IVF approach, which is, you know, let's not treat women individually. Let's put everybody on the same protocol and let's make a baby in a lab and then put it back. So that doesn't really do anything to help restore whatever is broken, if you will. Okay. So the same approach goes for hysterectomies, unfortunately, because the doctors are not given tools to help find out often why a woman is having trouble, whether it be heavy bleeding, you know, whatever. They just say, oh, you don't like your periods anymore. You're bleeding too heavy and you're 40. Okay, well, we'll just take your uterus out. We don't have to worry about it anymore. Right. But that doesn't help a woman deal with the hormonal problems that are still there. So they might not see the problem anymore, the bleeding, but yet they're dealing with all of the storms of the hormones. And then you've now created a woman who doesn't have a chart to act as a tool to learn and to guide treatment, to learn what's wrong and to guide treatment. So it's a terrible thing in most cases. And most women don't need a hysterectomy. They just need to be treated with some care and, Yeah. And I don't mean to, you know, throw the OBGYNs under the bus, because they are, you know, providing the best care that they have been taught.
Thank you so much for helping to provide kind of an understanding for the connection and really the need that it's only our NAPRO doctors and NAPRO technology that are providing real solutions, who are expertise in this. People who aren't NAPRO doctors are not trained in helping to understand options for hysterectomies with the amount of options that there are. Options and information for getting to the core of miscarriages, infertility, underlying health issues, even helping to understand the connection to breast cancer. So please check out a NAPRO doctor near you. We'll include the links in the show notes today. You're listening to Trending with Timmarie here on Relevant Radio. To find Dr. Susan Caldwell, you can find her at drsusancaldwell.com. That's drsusancaldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L.com. We'll include a link to her on social media, and I've also tagged her on Instagram. She has great work, great blogs to help educate you in these areas. We'll be right back here on Trending talking about hope. We'll also wrap up the question having to do with the dependence of our culture on contraception. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmarie on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I want to talk about hope here in the second week of Advent. Before we do, let's talk about contraception. Still, we've been talking about it all hour here on Trending. And one of the common ideas that I want to debunk is this principle of the contraceptive culture, this principle of reliance, the idea that contraception is necessary for self-determination for women. And it's really interesting when we think about this, because what they're saying is contraception is necessary because women have no self-control. Chastity isn't a part of the culture. That's what they're saying. You see, there are circumstances that we need to understand that every decision has circumstances, strings attached, roadblockers, need for resources that we may or may not have, no matter what the choice is. And I bring this up because for some reason, we think when it comes to intimacy, when it comes to children, that we absolutely need contraception because that's the only thing that's going to determine whether or not we can have an education, whether or not we can go to school or have children on our own timing. And I think it's fascinating that for some reason we ignore all the other hindrances, such as time and money and other various resources, and just focus in on that one thing being that is contraception being necessary for women's self-determination. I say this over and over again. I have a college education. I have a master's degree. I'm working in the field of choice that matches with what I've studied. I'm married. I have a child. Now, I'm not saying that life is easy. I'm not saying that all these steps have been easy. But what I am saying is that I didn't need contraception. I didn't need birth control to do what I did. Self-control, discipline, the grace of God, the mercy, the generosity of others, those are things we need. The loving support of our family, of mentors. Those are the things we need, not contraception to help us in our self-determination. You see, fundamentally, there's a lie today going around among young people, among all of the four generations right now, really. The lie that life is all about doing whatever you want. You see, it's this misunderstanding of freedom. That is, thinking that freedom is to do whatever you want, rather than understanding that freedom is the opportunity to do what is good, what is right. Understanding this whole idea that the culture is lying when it says that babies are a hindrance, that they prohibit you from being free, when indeed they're a gift. We have to return to this idea that consent to sexual intimacy is a consent to a baby. You see, that's part of what makes intimacy so special. The potential for children within the context, yes, of loving pleasure. And I think that that's so important that we emphasize this. That potency is part of what makes intimacy so special. I think we've also lost this understanding when we talk about self-determination, remembering that kids are fun. They grow you. They change your goals and priorities, sure, but they make you more responsible. They may change your timing of what you do in life. They may even prevent you from doing some things. But they change your worldview and they make your dreams better and less self-centered. And I think all of this idea about self-determination and contraception being necessary for that reminds us that we have a goal. A goal that is to totally change the views of a culture when it comes to human person and freedom. Not just intimacy, but freedom itself. Understanding what life is for. Who am I? What am I made for? Helping our peers to understand by our example that we're made for life-giving, self-giving love. That is what we see on the cross. That the cross, including its suffering, not just the loving act of Christ, but the suffering that occurred, is a necessary part of the human vocation and identity because it comes from an act of love, from that act of love that Christ gave himself on the cross for you and I to the Heavenly Father to reopen the gates of heaven, to give us abounding graces to be with him. That requires understanding our goal is heaven. We have to know where our trajectory is oriented toward. Understanding yet again, as I mentioned, freedom is for doing good, not whatever I want. Not detachment from any and every relationship. Not a detachment from what is right. Freedom is for doing good. It's for something. We have to stop defining it with a negative context. You see, this is the mindset that will free people from the contraceptive and abortion-centered culture that's stealing joy, stealing relationships, stealing children, stealing marriages. Yes, and I would even argue stealing educations and even career, because it's making us so narrow-minded and actually slaves to the contraceptive culture rather than being in tune with the creation of the human person and what we're made for. You're listening to Trending with Tim right here on Relevant Radio. I really do hope that you'll share this episode with a friend and help them to understand what the church believes and understands when it comes to contraception, but also that we've not been even unpacking today necessarily on the show the fullness of the church's teaching on contraception. What we see here often on Trending is how what the church teaches is in line with science, with medical technology. So people so often say, wow, the church is so scientific because what it says, the guidelines it gives, it's the blueprint for the human person. It matches with psychology, sociology, medical technology, and sciences. Yes, the church has the answers. And that's why we can dive into the science and the psychology and match it up with what the church teaches. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. I want to just make a brief couple comments as we wrap the week up. And this first week of Advent, talking about the virtue of hope, which is what that first candle on the Advent wreath stands for. There have been comments made about some of the virtues necessary in order to have hope. And one of my favorite philosophers and theologians, Joseph Pieper, comments about how magnanimity and humility are necessary for hope. And if you don't know what magnanimity is, it's really kind of this loss of virtue. It's this idea that you can courageously seek after great things and also work on becoming worthy of those great things that you seek after. That is magnanimity. So doing and thinking of great things and becoming worthy of those ideas and actions. Now, with that, that also requires humility, that we don't become self-centered and completely focused on ourselves. I think this is important within the context of understanding hope. Hope is a theological virtue, but on a natural level, we can also work to be predisposed to that theological virtue, that grace that God can bestow upon us. And that requires us being magnanimous and humble before our Lord, understanding that we are indeed creatures before the Creator, understanding this before the heavenly throne, especially in prayer this Advent.